We made this.
Hi everyone, Carl here. Hope you're all doing well. Now, the Movie Palace will be back with in-depth film discussions very soon, but today's podcast is just a mini episode. I wanted to talk to you about my efforts for Raquel Stetcher's Summer Reading Classic Film Book Challenge, which started back in May and is now coming to an end. So if you're unaware of this, Raquel runs the challenge through her website, outofthepastblog.com, and what it involves is reading 6 books about classic film and reviewing them. Now, I had high hopes of completing the challenge, but I've had a busy time of late, so sadly, I've only managed to get through 4 titles, and, you know, hopefully I'll do better in 2022. Anyway, the first few books I finished this year were Patricia White's entry in the BFI Film Classics series, which is about Alfred Hitchcock's Rebecca. I also read Quentin Tarantino's novelization of his film, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and I read Desiree J. Garcia's book, The Movie Musical. Now, I've written short reviews for each of these on Instagram. The podcast's handle on there is Movie Palace Podcast if you want to go over and take a look. So yeah, like I said, I've read 4 books in total for this challenge, and today I wanted to review the latest one on the podcast. So I've recently finished Diane Negra's Shadow of a Doubt, which was published earlier this year by Auteur, which is an imprint of Liverpool University Press. So before I go any further, I will say that although this is an academic book, I do think that it is an accessible one that may appeal to a general reader who's interested in the subject matter. As the title suggests, the book analyses the 1943 film Shadow of a Doubt, which stars Teresa Wright and Joseph Cotten, and was directed by Alfred Hitchcock. Now, the film's narrative concerns a teenage girl, Mrs. Charlie, played by Wright, who's initially pleased when her uncle comes to visit before she begins to suspect he may be a murderer. And the uncle, played by Cotten, is also named Charlie. If you haven't seen the film, I'd highly recommend it. Go watch it now. As Negra points out in the book, it can be seen as an atypical Hitchcock film in some respects. So, as an example, it's quite unusual in the sense that it features a teenage girl as its protagonist. But I agree with the idea put forward here in the book, that it really is a significant part of Hitchcock's body of work. However, what Negra highlights is that there's been a relative lack of academic attention given to Shadow of a Doubt, which is an oversight which this book corrects very effectively, because this is a fantastic addition to the copious amount of scholarship already produced about Hitchcock and his films. If you haven't seen it, by the way, be warned that I will go on to mention some key plot points here. Now, if you are already an admirer of the film, you may be tempted to skip the first section of the book, which is a synopsis of the narrative. But I think you'd be unwise to do so because it contains astute observations which are illustrative of the perceptive analysis the book provides as a whole. For instance, Negra makes comparisons between the film and other Hitchcock titles, as when she observes that the Merry Widow murderer's tendency to strangle women is in line with other acts of strangulation that feature in a number of the director's films, including Notorious, Strangers on a Train, and Rear Window, amongst others. In terms of this being a Hitchcock film, though, it's worth pointing out that this is a book that is aware of the potential limitations of director-centric approaches. It's always important to take into account the various factors that may shape a film's meanings, yet looking at films as the work of an auteur has the potential to downplay this in favour of an unwarranted attachment to the creative vision of a director, especially when they're often referred to as a genius like Hitchcock is. But I think Negra avoids this tendency here. She doesn't seek to deny the strong influence that Hitchcock had in crafting his films, but she also highlights the collaborative nature of Shadow of a Doubt's artistry, pointing to the importance of figures such as the writer Sally Benson, who was instrumental in terms of moving the script forward. So Negra's point is that yes, this film bears relation to many other Hitchcock films, but his authorship is always qualified by other factors. So, Negra's overall focus with the book is on various aspects of Shadow of a Doubt, which include its genre-bending status, its relationship to issues of power and gender, and its historical relevance. She places particular emphasis on the film's relationship with the ideological systems that underpin American life, including the social roles that people are expected to take up, and the idea of family values. So, whereas classic Hollywood narratives often shore up traditional structures such as heterosexual marriage, Hitchcock's films are quite noteworthy because they tend to highlight the shakiness of such arrangements. And as Negra states then, this film in particular provides an experience of intensely mixed feelings about family life. Now, if you've seen Shadow of a Doubt, you'll remember that the younger Charlie is fascinated by her uncle, but comes to be appalled by his values. And yet, like him, she finds herself to be willing and able to kill someone she finds morally objectionable. And while on the one hand, you can see the death of her uncle towards the end of the film as a spur-of-the-moment act of self-defense, I think this is complicated by a scene that comes earlier in the film, in which she expresses a desire to murder him. Now, to its credit, the film has a lot of interesting ambiguities like this, which makes it a fascinating piece to watch and rewatch. And this book is very strong at drawing out these ambiguities, which is one reason that it's a great read. So because it's such a layered film, Shadow of a Doubt is difficult to label with certainty. And this also applies to the issue of what genre it falls under, because the film combines elements of several modes of cinematic storytelling, meaning that it's hard to pin it down as one particular type of film. For instance, the book identifies the links between Shadow of a Doubt and the cycle of female gothic films of the 1940s. This is a trend which also encompasses Hitchcock's Rebecca and Suspicion. We learn that the film is typical of this cycle in some respects, but that it also introduces some unusual complexities. So the ending is relevant to this, because unlike more conventional stories, this film doesn't give us a palatable form of closure. Yes, Uncle Charlie is dead at the end, but his life ends up being publicly celebrated. Negra also teases out Shadow of a Doubt's relationship to film noir, observing that while it is not always seen as a central example of noir, it does feature some of its characteristics, which includes the morally troubled conclusion I've just mentioned. One consequence of the book's consideration of the film's blend of genres is that it opens up a range of imaginative ways of thinking about the characters. So to give an example, I appreciated the interpretation of the film's links with horror, which mean that Uncle Charlie can be read as a vampire-like figure. Now, I hadn't thought of this before, but it begins to make a lot of sense once you consider some of the details, you know, such as his aversion to being photographed and the unsettling manner of his introduction. If you can recall this, he's pictured lying eerily still on his bed whilst fully dressed, almost as if he is waiting for an opportune moment to reanimate. Negra also discusses how Uncle Charlie can be understood in terms of the film's wartime context. She points out that whilst there are not that many overt references to the war, Shadow of a Doubt may contain cues that audiences of the time could have intuitively responded to, in ways that may be difficult for contemporary viewers to pick up on. For instance, would Uncle Charlie have been understood as a failed military recruit? After all, he's within the required age range, he appears to be able-bodied, so this is an assumption that may have been readily made by a 1943 audience. The historical reading of Shadow of a Doubt also extends to the younger Charlie, who can be seen as an example of a broader trend of teenage girls being increasingly featured as cultural subjects. So just think, you know, of some of the notable girl stars who were popular during the mid-20th century. For example, figures like Margaret O'Brien, Elizabeth Taylor, Shirley Temple. Now, I can only scratch the surface in this short review, but I hope that some of the examples I've given suggest that this is a wide-ranging book that examines Shadow of a Doubt in all sorts of perceptive ways. One aspect of this that I particularly appreciated is the way that it draws out the links between Hitchcock's film and a range of others that came later. This includes not just relatively clear points of overlap, such as David Lynch's Blue Velvet, which also offers an unsettling depiction of complicated American ideals, but also more inventive comparisons too. So, for instance, Negra compares Shadow of a Doubt with John Ford's Western The Searchers. Both of these films feature uncle figures who have a fluctuating relationship to the family structure that they're not fully a part of. Negra also observes that the contemporary phenomenon of so-called prestige TV may bear a possible debt to Shadow of a Doubt in terms of the fascination that programs like Dexter and The Fall have with charismatic serial killers. So I've just given a couple of examples here, but Negra discusses a range of affinities between Hitchcock's film and other pop culture touchstones, which highlights how Shadow of a Doubt can be seen as a landmark movie. To sum up then, this is a very insightful book that is extremely good at teasing out the significance of Shadow of a Doubt. In a nutshell, it makes the case that this unsettling film's immaculately structured narrative contains quite radical content. And I think this is argued successfully, meaning that, as I said earlier, this book is an enjoyable read and one that may well appeal to general readers who are enthusiastic about the film, as well as those who are interested in studying it. So it's definitely a thumbs up from me. Just before I go, let me say a quick thank you to Liverpool University Press, who provided me with a review copy of the book. If you want to know more about this year's reading challenge, do go to the Out of the Past blog, where you can have a look at the review roundups that Raquel has posted. So the address for that is www.outofthepastblog.com. All right, that's about it for today. I'll be back soon with some full-length episodes, so keep an ear out for discussions in the near future about City Lights and Saturday Night and Sunday Morning, amongst others. In the meantime, you can look for the podcast on social media. We're at Movie Palace Pod on Twitter. So I hope you can join me next time, listeners, when the curtain rises once again at the Movie Palace.
Elsewhere on We Made This. Frame to Frame.
Being John Malkovich, I think, is probably the most original film I will ever see, because I had absolutely no idea what was going to come next. Then when it did come, I was like, okay, right, that makes sense.
Well, it makes sense being a loaded term in the context of this film.
Well, yeah, in any other film, it'd be ridiculous. Like, oh, what, we're suddenly going through John Malkovich's subconscious whilst one person's trying to shoot another. Like, it's ridiculous, but it makes sense within the context of the film. I pretty much agree with everything that you were saying about it being the exploitation of celebrity. That was my sort of big takeaway. And the thing I was thinking, oh yes, I'll be able to say this on the podcast and it will sound smart, was that they get their 15 minutes of fame. But...
oh, sorry about that.
Yeah, I mean, this is the beauty of us not talking about ahead of time, right?
Yeah, is it?
Pick a disc.
Was that kind of your entry into music as well? So did you learn a lot about music because of your parents' record collection was then? Or?
Oh, of course. They were the first DJs in my life. I mean, you know, what they listened to was gospel to me. And then I started learning my own music through listening to albums on the radio, listening to stuff that my friends would dub a cassette copy. Oh, you got to hear this album. And they would dub a couple songs and make mixtapes. And then passing mixtapes around between friends to kind of introduce each other to new bands. But the bands that I listened to in my youngest years, my childhood, are the ones that I still look back at with just some, because they helped really shape and form who I am as a music fan.
Rarely Going, an animated Star Trek podcast.
They've gone through that script and went, yep, that's fine. And that's been approved by, you know, the executive producers, the writing room. There's a lot of people that have had to go through this episode before it's got to air. And, you know, the fact that they can have something like that where it can be a little bit self-critical of the thing is good. You know, Star Trek can often be classed as taking itself a little bit too seriously. And I think something like that, you know, the fact that people go, yeah, you know what, that's fair point. And they're probably, you know, people are aware of the criticism, the positive things. You know, people are basing Star Trek around a lot of some of these decisions and leaning into that. So I think that, you know, it shows that the writers are self-aware, certainly. And, you know, that also extends out with the Lower Decks kind of writing room too.
Yeah, fair.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network.